The following Dharma talk was given at Boundless Way Temple in Worcester, Massachusetts. The temple is an affiliate of Boundless Way Zen, a multi-lineage school of Zen Buddhism.
So Mike Sensei and David Roshi and I were talking about what we wanted to talk about and how we wanted to talk about it last night. And we all agreed to talk about one particular koan, which has some resonance for all three of us on many different levels, and we'll see what levels we get to touch into. We're going to both mornings share the Dharma talk, which is how we used to do it back in the day when Boundless Way Zen was just James Ford, David, and me. And now at this session, it's Mike Felicky, David, and me. So Mike Sensei stepping into those venerable footsteps of our teacher, James Ford Roshi. So I'm going to begin, and then we'll seamlessly transition to Mike, and then we'll seamlessly transition to David, and then we'll seamlessly transition into our Dharma dialogue. Maybe. Seamlessly is the maybe part. So the koan that we chose is from the Book of Serenity, or the Book of Equanimity, or as our friend Dosha Port Roshi translates it, the Book of Being at Ease. And apparently this collection comes from a place in China called the Serenity Temple. And it was put together by a teacher named Wan Song, I think maybe around 12th century, I'm not sure, but somewhere around there. And Wan Song collected these cases, these so-called koans, public cases is the translation of koan. And these are stories, sayings, and doings of the Zen masters of the past, at least sayings and doings that were attributed to them by their ancestors who lived a few hundred years later. So you have to think about, you know, us right now would be looking at maybe people who lived in the 1600s or 1700s, and history is notoriously unstable. So whether these things happened or not, it's hard to know. But for many, many hundreds of years, many centuries, we've been using these stories in the transmission from China to Japan and Korea and Vietnam and to the United States and Europe and South America, places where Zen has spread, and Australia, New Zealand, can't forget them, and Africa, South Africa. I guess everywhere. The world is covered with Zen. That's a great feeling. Yeah, wouldn't that be great? It is great, and yet. Wan Song was in the lineage that includes Hongzhi, and Hongzhi is the author of a few of the readings we did earlier this morning, and so Hongzhi always has a poem as a response to these koans, and Wan Song included Hongzhi's poetry and some of his interpretation. So Wan Song always has an introduction, which I'll read, and then the case. He also does some commentary, which I will read a little tiny bit of this morning, and then Tian Tong, or Hongzhi's poem. So Wan Song says, this is case number 16 of the Book of Serenity, pointing to a deer, making it out to be a horse, picking up earth and turning it to gold, rousing wind and thunder on the tongue, hiding a bloody sword between the eyebrows, sitting there, watching success and failure, standing there, examining death and life. Tell me, what state is this? And the koan goes like this. Magu, ringed staff in hand, came to Zhang Qing. He circled the meditation seat three times, shook his staff once, and stood there at attention. Zhang Jing said, right, right. Magu also went to Nanchuan, circled the meditation seat three times, shook his staff, and stood there at attention. Nanchuan said, wrong. wrong. Ma Gu said, Zhang Jing said right. Why do you say wrong? Nanchuan said, Zhang Jing is right. It's you who's wrong. Your action is the movement of the wind. In the end, it will perish. And Tiancheng or Hongzhi's poem goes like this. Right and wrong. Watch out for the trap. Seeming to put down, seeming to uphold, it's hard to tell who is the elder brother, who the younger. Conceding, he adapts to the time. Denying, what's special to me? One shake of the metal staff, standing out all alone. Three times around the seat, a leisurely romp. The monastery's agitated. Right and wrong are born. It seems like they're seeing ghosts in front of their skulls. So, so many things to look at, but I think for my little piece of this morning's talk, I just want to say a couple of words of background around these three people, Ma Gu, Zhang Jing, and Nanchuan. So all three of these people were Dharma heirs of the same teacher, Matsu. And Nanchuan later gave Dharma transmission to Zhao Zhou, who some of you may recollect, gave us the Mu Koan. So these people lived around the 700s and 800s in what's sometimes called as the golden age of Zen, just because there's so many great stories from that period. And Ma Gu was the youngest. We actually don't know when he was born or died. He's famous for Dogen quoting him at the end of the Genjo Koan, where he calls him Mao Yu Baoche, and talks about his activity with a fan. Some of you may know that story. But this is when Ma Gu is newly transmitted teachers in those days would go to many to teachers and test themselves. And they would carry their ringed staffs, their what we call in Japanese shakujo, which is the same staff, it's my staff that James Ford gave to me when he gave me transmission, that Ray pounded on the floor and shook as we came down the stairs before the liturgy service. This ringed staff is supposed to scare away demons, and we hope that it's doing its job. So Ma Gu is going on pilgrimage with his ringed staff, and according to Wansong, it was customary for people to circle the seat of the teacher and then retire to a back corner in respect for the teacher. But Ma Gu didn't do that. He circled around and shook his staff three times, and then he stood there in front of the teacher, kind of challenging. And he had two different responses to what he did. And according to Wansong, he also before this went to another teacher who was also a Dharma heir of Matsu. Matsu had a great number of Dharma heirs. I've heard over 100, I can't remember the exact number, lots and lots of people sending out into the world to make trouble. And the trouble continues to this day. So Ma Gu also, before he went to these guys, went to National Teacher Hui Zhang's place, and he shook his staff and stood there, same thing. And the National Teacher said, since you're capable of such as this, what further need is there to see me? Ma Gu's response was to shake his staff again. I have to interpolate here. Oh, what a pity. National Teacher said, you wild fox ghost, get out of here. So that was the first response. And then he took that same thing to his elder brother, Zhang Jing, who approved of him, apparently. He said, right, right. And we all are looking for that, so it must have done Ma Gu's heart some good to have his older brother, Zhang Jing, approve of him after having been beaten down by the National Teacher, called a wild fox ghost, which is a bad thing, by the way, in China and Japan and Korea. Then he goes to Nanchuan, and Nanchuan says, wrong, wrong. And there's the hook. And we feel ourselves and Magu get hooked. And it's important at this point when we work on this particular koan to really feel that hook go right deeply into our hearts. Right and wrong. I want to be right. I don't want to be wrong. I don't want to be corrected or shown a different way. I don't want to be met with any kind of negativity. I just want to be approved of. This is how human beings are. And I guess they were this way in the 8th century as well. And probably way before that. So, and then Nanxuan clarifies his meaning by digging a deeper hole. He says, Zhang Qing is right. It's you who's wrong. Your action is the movement of the wind. In the end, it will perish.
So, how are you doing? Are you doing well? Is your practice right? Or is it all wrong? Are you making mistakes and tallying them up? So here we are sitting together, each of us, the students, each of us, the teachers. Each of us circling round and round one another, showing ourselves to one another. And feeling that the consequences of that undoubtedly arising. Oh, I'm doing very well. I'm a good student. I know just where to put my feet. Oh, I screwed that up again. Shoot, so bad, so wrong. The question, what state is this? What state is this? So we enter into retreat with this opening question. How about now, what state is this? I am reminded of, speaking of James Ford, reminded of one of his favorite lines, don't believe anything you think. And of course we do. We do believe our judgments of right and wrong. They arise. They are a natural consequence of being a human being, of being in this world, in a particular position in relation to this world and in relation to one another, judgments arise. Sometimes the judgments are of ourselves, sometimes of others, sometimes others judging ourselves, and then our judgment of others judging ourselves, and their judgment of our judging their judgment. This is karmic causes and conditions, vast and quite beyond our reckoning. And yet, quite real for us. This experience feels so true. To be right is to be right. I can imagine Magu as he's told, right, right, yes! Fucking A. I am the man. And heading off to the next temple. And then wrong. But wait, I did the same thing. What do you mean? Exactly. So, our practice, what state is this? It has great power for the way. It may not seem like much to just be attentive to these different arisings. The arising of feeling right, of feeling wrong, whatever may be arising for us, absolute peace and equanimity, spaciousness, turmoil, then the thought, oh, this is the right way and this is the wrong way. This is just the great catastrophe of being a human being. Kind of funny, actually. And also can be quite painful. So to acknowledge that, to really acknowledge that, to see this condition, to bear compassionate witness, to be kind toward it. What state is this?
So actually, a commonwealth, not even a state, here. But that aside, not to quibble with my great colleagues, of course, to land here and was so struck by Melissa talking about Mayu, sort of the chump in this story, but a wonderful chump, great heart, who is willing to show himself. Clearly, Mayu at this point has had some deep taste of the Dharma, and all of us here. All of you have had some deep taste of the Dharma. Maybe just a glimmering. Maybe you think it's not enough. Maybe you think everyone else has had a deeper taste than you. But each one of us fully tasting and fully tasted by the Dharma. The Dharma, of course, eats us up. Eats each one of us up, and then we disappear back into the Dharma, back into the mystery from where we came. So Mayu, not hiding, but coming forward with his great presentation. And Melissa mentioned that he is well known. We talk about him here in this case. But later on, when he really deepens his understanding, then he becomes known for using the fan. And I think that's not because he had special fan tricks that he did, but he fanned himself. He took care of himself. He met his life. And this is our great aspiration as we sit here practicing this upright stillness, this together alone practice. We are perfecting taking care of ourself. We are practicing taking care of ourself. And taking care of yourself does not mean just taking care of those parts of yourself that you like. All of us look at ourselves or imagine we're looking at ourselves. Of course, you can't ever see your seeing. There is only seeing, but we create this image, doing well, not doing well. And this taking care of ourselves, showing up as ourselves, and then being everyone. Being everything that arises, not just the wise and spacious one, but the lost and contracted one. And this great vow, to wake up. Of course, when we start, we have some image of what waking up looks like, and we get some taste, and Magu was demonstrating not retiring to the corner, but standing up as himself. A wonderful thing, and through his wonderful and courageous and sincere and misguided effort. He found himself. He encountered light and dark. He encountered bitter and sweet. And moved forward on his path, not by increasing one side and decreasing the other, but by meeting this moment in the particular, revealing himself, being willing to be himself. And being yourself does not mean simply being the one who is critical. Being yourself is being the Buddha. You sit here and maybe afraid, maybe all of us afraid to be at ease. What if you don't have to work so hard? What if you already know? Do you have the courage to sit upright at ease? Do I have the courage to stop struggling, to step into this wisdom, this compassion that is our nature, just as we step into the delusion that is our nature? So Magu, ring staff in hand, came to Jan Jing. He circled the meditation seat three times, shook his staff once, and stood there at attention. Jan Jing said, "Right, right." Magu also went to Nanshuan, circled the meditation seat three times, shook his staff, and stood at attention. Nanshuan said, "Wrong, wrong." Magu said, "Jan Jing said right. Why do you say wrong?" Nanshuan said, "Jan Jing is right. It's you who's wrong. This is something that can be blown by the power of the wind. It inevitably disintegrates." Thank you. So please sit at ease. And we'll have our Dharma dialogue. Our Dharma dialogue is a chance for each one of us to play Magu, for a moment. So this is a time for your questions about this case or about Zen or your what arose for you as you encounter Magu and these words. And if you raise your hand, we'll call on you and go one by one.
And just a couple more things. We're raising the guideline about eye contact. Feel free. And also, we're recording this talk. So if what you ask or say, you don't want to have it recorded, we'll just turn it off while you're speaking and then turn it back on.
Yesterday, I was driving and I caught myself focused on apparently my favorite subject, me. I was unconsciously telling the story about things that I did and did right, and things that I didn't do and I should do, and things that I'm not going to do, as far as in the time that I had. And at some point, I caught myself. I saw that story that was there, and this, as far as a little line, just came up to me immediately. And the line was, "Is that I am the hero of the story that I'm afraid to tell?" Because here it is. It's just all inside. To kind of step into that. So I love this idea of stepping forward to be seen. That's there. And in some cases, Magu is this hero, stepping forward. In that very step, he's also the butt of the joke, as far as that's there. And I really appreciate his willingness to step forward. And I think at least as I'm hearing this talk, I think that's what is coming up as far as for me, is that this idea that I have as far as what that hero is, or who I am as a hero, is so limited. So limited. And that true hero of the true story to be told is, how can I show up in this moment? Just this moment. And so, yeah. I'm willing to step into that.
Well, and I think this this stepping forward in our power too, and in the daring to actually want to wake up, or daring to say, actually, this is clear to me. I understand this, and of course, I don't understand this. But we resist both. I don't want to look too foolish, but I don't want to look too full of myself. That would be even worse. But this great courage.
And I think you're right to talk about it as a risk. I mean, David talked about it in his talk too, because if you come forward foolishly, you'll get, you know, a reaction from the world. If you come back arrogantly, you'll get a reaction from the world. If you come forward clearly, you'll get a reaction from the world. It's kind of terrifying, right? It's like you're going to get, So, so we pretend that one of those things is safe, and I think many of us start with the first one. And this is almost sequential. You're pointing to two steps of the sequence, which are really important. This seeing that it's you're the hero of your own story, and like, so then doing something, taking the risk, that allows the hero of the story to drop away. Right? And when that happens, a whole other set of steps appear. But if you fail to do this, if you fail to go on pilgrimage, essentially, and show up, you can't get beyond that, right? And this is why in Dokusan we want people to show up as themselves, not as the best Zen students or the worst Zen students, right, wrong. Although inevitably,
we are.
That's what colors being human.
Yeah.
And eventually we cut through it.
Yeah, I'm not sure my story has changed, but I guess I'm aware of it.
Just to see how tightly you're holding
on. Yeah, I know. That's it. And I think that's it. It's maybe a little bit loose enough around that story.
Or not.
Yeah, so maybe.
When you were talking about going to see the three different teachers and getting different responses, it reminded me of something that was kind of similar but flipped around, where when I was brand new to my martial art, my teacher every now and then would say, "Good job," pat me on the shoulder, and think, "Oh, great, I did it right." And then at some point, a couple years later, same thing would happen. I'm like, "Oh, shit, next week's going to be hard." Because I had graduated the next letter of onion peeled off, and now everything was going to get scrutinized a little bit more stringently, new stuff. And that lasted a long time. We're like, "Oh God, next week's gonna suck." And then I realized now, you know, I don't remember when it shifted, but then I thought, "Oh good, I get to learn something new next week. It's gonna be hard, but that's what's gonna help me to grow." And so it's kind of neat that it was basically the same answer every time, but it had different meaning as I, as I changed.
Watching the self construct itself and our reactions, and over time, it's amazing how time is such a profound teacher in practice. For me, you know, I also sometimes think that I ought to be in a particular place, a particular state, and I should be residing there all the time. And yet, of course, there's continual regressions and, you know, ups and downs, and you know, imagining that it's a straight path, And that has not been true for me. It's been constant feelings of release, but then caught back in all kinds of tension and confusion, and then, you know, and just witnessing the whole thing, you know, cycling around. Amazing.
That's the best.
I didn't catch it.
I like the idea of Magu. He basically doesn't really ask for any. He just shows up. And it's like the Mu Koan, you know. Right, right, right. So what is right? Everything is as it is. Mm-hmm. And what is wrong? You know, everything is not as it appears to be. Mm-hmm. So it's like not being able to hold on to one or the other. If Magu takes it as a judgment of his character, then, you know, he could take offense. But if they're talking about the nature of everything, then, which contains both right and wrong, then it's pointing to something beyond right and wrong.
No, exactly.
Our first teacher used to say on Sesshin, don't take anything personally. And in one of our readings, I forget who it is, she talks about not taking our failures personally. Like, what? You know, I am my failures. You know, but if we don't take that personally, just, course correction, here, there.
But, and it's the same for our successes.
Yeah.
You know, not taking our successes personally. Just, and as we were saying before when we were responding to Paul, this is a sequential thing, and at some point you have to own your actions, right? And then eventually, with time, things loosen up and the ownership disappears.
Right, because who is it who
should? Yeah, and that's the essential question. That's right. Yeah. Who is this one?
Next to Paul.
Sebastian, did you have your hand up?
We talked about it already a little bit. It appears to me that my favorite subject is also myself, but it's an anti-hero.
Yes, yes.
Someone I don't really enjoy all the time. It's someone who's being judged and who responds to that, and as a victim responds to that, asking for love. Yeah. The same amount that it is given to the sibling who does everything fine, and it's loved when you have those breakthroughs and you have beautiful meditation sessions in which whole universe is just breathing in and breathing out. And then the other sibling is just looking at that one and saying, I'm going to kill you. and they're both demanding love. And it's not always easy to be fair with both of them. This is the first time that I hear this case. We have been speaking about the one who shows up and says and is told wrong, but what about the one who was told right? It's probably that one also felt the success as his or her own. And probably got into the exact same
hole.
Thank you.
It reminds me of something that happened to me. This is the way that the mind will hear anything and will interpret it through whichever one of the selves is predominant. Right, so for many, 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 many years, the self that was predominant was the one who was wrong. I still go to that. It's very comfortable. You know, there's a kind of clinging to it. And I must have been about 20 years old, and I was learning to play a Javanese instrument in a Javanese orchestra. Not Japanese, but from Java. That are all metallophones. They're all gongs and bells and things. And I was learning to play this big gong that, you know, 2 feet high, a little nub on the top, and I had to just strike it almost like Pat's striking the big kesu bell. And the guy who was teaching it, the name of the instrument was a kanong, which is what it sounds like. All the instruments in this orchestra sound like what they are. Kanong. And this guy came along and he looked at me, and I didn't even think he'd ever noticed me before. There's about 30 people in the orchestra. And he said, "Nice kanong." and I had a little flicker of, "Oh, good job." And then I thought, "Oh, he's just probably talking about the instrument." it was subtle enough that I got to feed my, you know, my sense of low self-esteem. It was perfect. And years later, I got to know this guy, and I asked him, "What did you mean?" He said, "I don't remember that." which is the other part, like that we're so self-preoccupied, but most people don't care about the state of our inner world. Yeah, nice kanong. Nice case. Yeah, Alan and then Alan first.
So, so we hear this story, and Magu meets one teacher, and one thing happens. And he meets a second teacher, visits a second teacher, and a second thing happens. And being human beings, right, we want to turn that into some kind of a narrative that makes sense, some kind of sequential story, because that's how we make sense of the world. But as I'm sitting with it, while you're all talking about it and opening doors for me, they're going like they're superimposing on each other. And now it's just one teacher and just one answer. And the answer is, you know, right, right. And wrong. And right.
Okay.
And wrong. And you know what's coming? Then is Shunryu Suzuki, Roshi said to his students, "You're all perfect just as you are. And you could all use a little improvement."
Yeah, thank you. You know, to me that touches into, in a real important way, the heart of the Dharma. There's a sense that there is a self just keeps on selfing. That's its job. And so up and down the hills and valleys we go. And there's a part of our practice where we're being nourished by something that is bigger than that story that we're telling. And that's also always present, always available, always here. And the mind goes to either or. I am either in the self-selfing and I'm right or wrong. Well, we are. The self is selfing and I'm right and wrong. And that's part of what's happening. And I'm also being nourished by this universe and, you know, held at the same time by something that I can't understand, by something that myself can't self. So Shunryu Suzuki to me speaks to just the heart of the Dharma. And of course, that sounds very dualistic too. Like now there's, you know, the part that's, you know, there's the self-selfing and it's the problem. And then there's, and I don't think, you know, they're so interwoven, you know, the universe making up that self that is selfing. And, you know, ourselves making up this universe that is universing, always co-arising.
Sure. Ty.
One of the reasons I like this koan is that, contrary to what some people are saying, it seems to actually actively break down the whole hero idea. I'm the opposite of whoever was first speaking. I feel like I'm constantly the hero of my own story. I'm constantly making that narrative about me all the time. And what I like about this koan is that Magu, I kind of like to think of him as Mr. Magu.
Yes,
so do we. Yes, with his little glasses.
Yes.
Just going around with his ring staff.
The first time he does it, it's pure. It's just coming out, and it's right. Mm-hmm. And the next time, and he's a hero. And the next time he does it, he's saying, "Look, I was a hero. I got it right."
Yeah, yeah.
Bonk. Yeah. And maybe the next time he'll forget about that and get it right. So maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, I think that this right and wrong, the sequential thing that we have a taste of the Dharma and then we solidify it, mm-hmm. right? Like, and it's the levels, Corwin, you were talking about. So mm-hmm. we really do attain something. We really do have insight. It's genuine, mm-hmm. and it's just that it doesn't last. Mm-hmm. And it is, this life is not, so I'm going to get here to the enlightened world and then I'll travel in the, you know, in some other land. But it is traveling in this land of birth and death, and understanding and clarity is born and then it dies. And whatever you learned before will not get you through where you are. The state you're in now is something you have never been in. Right? And so we can appreciate, well, I've always been terrible, I've always been great, and then here we are. This is not a state we know. Maybe not even a commonwealth we know. And we're practicing loosening up anti-hero, hero, it's all the same. But practicing, wow, what's this?
Yeah. But just for those of you who don't live in Massachusetts, the joke is that Massachusetts is not a state. It's a commonwealth. You know, legally, there's no such thing as the state of Massachusetts. The other little piece of this, too, I so appreciate what you're both saying. I'm also recognizing it's harder for some of us to step forward into the right part than it is for other people, just culturally around gender. You know, that we have women in this room too. I'm just thinking about the recording. I'm not the only woman here. We have people of color. There's lots of cultures being represented here. And just that impacts how we come forward. And it's very important to recognize that. Some of us will be quieter than others, and some of us will come forward. And Magu is a person who was, kind of the top of the heap in terms of culture in China at the time, so he could just come forward. But there are other people whose stories don't get told. And one of the things that we're trying to do as we move forward in our way of teaching Zen is to really value both sides and stretch ourselves into the other side. So wherever you tend to pop up, you know, but like I'm a risk taker. I'm going to go and do that. Notice that feeling and make sure it's balanced on the other side. And if you tend to withdraw and think, well, I better not say anything because these people sound so smart and they know all this stuff about Zen and Buddhism and I'm just an idiot, try to counter that as well. And because what we're really looking for here is everyone to come forward, not like Magu, like the people in the room. You know, so that is that in terms of the sequence. We've got to learn to take the risk to not cling to our self-image that has not been created by us, but we're part of some vast fabric of creation. I think Craig and then...
Speaking of people who don't feel themselves smart here, I'm feeling that right is wrong is right, but yet we take vows to cease evil and practice good. So that's choosing between right or wrong. Or
right, that's
wrong.
Right, that's right.
Yeah, you're right. if I may, I think about what Corwin was saying and some of the points we're pulling out, right? Corwin actually is a better martial artist now than the first time he entered the dojo. It's just a fact. There is a capacity that we have to grow in love and understanding. There really is. And to differentiate what is the best thing to do in a situation. And there is good and there is evil. You know, and then going back to what Alan said, they're not actually opposites in the way we think of them. And we'll make mistakes all the time. We'll think we're doing the right thing and it's wrong.
There was a line in there that really struck me that I wonder if we could think about for a minute. Usually when the stories of these koan stories are being read, I find that I start watching them like I'm watching a movie. So I'm watching it like images, not words so much, and I'm watching this movie and Magoo doing what he does, and it really struck me, not nearly as eloquently as Paul said, but seeing him as this, telling his own hero story, standing there at attention after shaking his stick at the teacher. And then, I don't know if it's in the koan story itself or in the verse, something like, and then it's like the things carried along by the wind. Mm-hmm. They will eventually disintegrate. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know if those are the exact words.
We read two different translations of that line.
That just knocked me out of my reverie watching the movie. You know? And it's where? it's all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. Magoo and me, you know.
Mm-hmm. Will.
Just blown away. Like little particles floating off in the wind. The wind dies down and they just fall to the ground and become part of the dirt.
Well, I think that's the context we're trying to touch, even as we explore right and wrong and, you know, choosing good, avoiding evil. All of it in the context of 50 years, 100 years from now, none of us will be here on this planet. Right? Some of us probably sooner than 100 years. We will. And holding it, it kind of blows away all of the, okay, I'm going to, if I just do this, if I just avoid evil, I'll be okay. Practice good. Mm-hmm. Right? Well, you probably do want to avoid evil and practice good as much as you can. And all of it in the context, evil, good, life, death. Thanks.
Yeah, it reminds me of a story that again, Thich Nhat Hanh is on my mind. The story he tells about, or the advice he gives, if you're in an argument with your partner, just pause and imagine yourselves in 200 years. You wash the dish. Wait a minute. Who cares?
Yeah.
There were some nasty dishes after 200 years.
They're piled up pretty high now.
So, yeah.
This koan amazes me because it just came at the right time. You know, I've been sitting on this cushion with really pretty much a bleak sort of outlook on things, going down the rabbit hole, and knowing that, Bill, this isn't accurate, what you're doing, but not able to pull myself back in.
Yeah.
So, you know, thank you for the koan. It gives me sort of permission to go back even deeper down the rabbit hole.
Yeah.
So that was my comment.
Yeah.
I appreciate it.
Well, full permission. And also you point to, I think, a really essential part of our practice that's quite painful is when we've had a taste of it and we know that we're doing the old thing. I'm going down the rabbit hole. And there are times when we're aware of that and we are utterly helpless. Mm-hmm. You know, we think, okay, I know. Now what am I supposed to do? I'm supposed to do something. I can't remember, you know. That we say that awareness is its own action. So sometimes your practice is just being in the rabbit hole, being wrong, and not a problem. And then I love this freedom that, oh, go deeper.
Mm-hmm.
You know, be a worse Zen student. Don't hold back. true nature revealed. No problem.
Yeah, so with that, oh, yeah, maybe one last one.
Sure. I just love this. This is as a reminder for me. And I might be wrong, but I think it's in the precepts, one of the precepts recitations where we talk about giving up fixed ideas about myself. And speaking for myself, I know there are many, many times when I think I have it all figured out, you know, about how to deal with a particular situation. And this is just a great reminder that, like, oh, that thing that worked for me before, I'm just going to do that again. And it's not that hard. It's more of giving up those fixed notions that we have about whether we figured something out or we understand something or we know just how to deal with a particular thing going on, and just showing up for that moment. Realizing that right or wrong is sort of, doesn't matter, it's irrelevant. Just being present to that moment and showing up is the giving up of those fixed ideas that are just so easy to hold as narratives. Mm-hmm. You know, they're really hard to let go of, I think. Yeah. So it's a great reminder.
But and those fixed ideas about ourselves, it actually makes no difference whether it's plus or minus.
Right.
Some of us congenitally think, well, I've got it covered. And some of us congenitally think, oh, I had no clue. Both of those are equal, anti-hero, hero, a fixed idea. And the freedom is not playing with them, but seeing them. Oh, yeah. Opening.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
So let's return to our sitting practice.